everybody! Welcome to another episode of Magic the Amateuring!
We're trapped in an elevator!
Yes, we are, but we're still coming to you live!
From Maria's home.
My elevator in my house.
The elevator in your house. I always told you, Maria, don't put an elevator in your house, and yet you insisted.
I did. Stairs and me just don't get along, okay?
Yeah, you know what?
What?
I still feel like we could have worked out like a climbing wall situation.
You're just really into that.
Okay, no, I'm thinking of like, you know those, it's like a rope squares.
Do you mean like those nets that you climb?
Yes.
Okay, yeah.
That's what I'm thinking.
Rope squares. Sounds like a candy.
Hey, we have an exciting episode coming up.
We sure do. We're talking about being in an elevator because if you watch our video feed,
yes,
we have our camera set up to record us as if we were doing a Skype interview on our computer because we are this episode.
We are. And it's exciting.
Yes, our special guest will be Chris Cluey, former NFL punter and game designer extraordinaire.
That's right. Dude has been playing games. You get to hear his origin story.
It's great.
To becoming a gamer.
Yeah.
Which is super cool. And he's going to talk to us about Magic. He's going to talk to us about the game that he spent 4 years working on.
Yeah, it's really cool.
Which is coming out very soon.
Yeah.
It's super sweet.
And we're going to talk a little bit about a sweet, super sweet play Megan made, which she texted me was her greatest play of her life.
It might be the greatest play of my life.
And we're going to talk a little bit about Amonkhet because we got our first peek into the plane of Nicol Bolas' design.
That's right.
But before we do any of that, we've got a few people to thank, starting off with you.
Thank you so much, those of you that support us on Patreon. It really means so much to us.
If you don't know this, by the way, like, this show is Megan's job.
Yeah. Right now, it is my job. I do all of our Patreon.
Yep.
I'm working on being a better accountant.
Megan's learning to become a professional CPA.
Literally, I'm sitting down with, like, spreadsheets and, like, data and, like, putting in numbers and being like, how does this work?
Yeah.
And it's... You know, it takes a lot to keep the show running.
It sure does.
It really
and I just
want
to point that out because, like, it's dedication, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's us dedicating ourselves to you every week and bringing you, you know, content, which will always be free, of course. But if you can afford to throw a dollar away or something, it really means a lot.
It means so much to us because, you know, we do scary things like punch in numbers.
Are you scared of that?
I mean, it's weirdly scary if I'm being honest.
Yeah, I get it.
Yeah.
So, patreon.com/MTAcast.
Yes.
Help get our numbers up for the end of February because I like to see like a positive growth at the end of the month. So it makes
us really helpful.
Feel like the show is going in the right direction.
Thank you as well to our sponsor, CardKingdom.com. CardKingdom.com/MTAcast.
Yeah, go there, get your cards. Now the standard's kind of hip-hop happening. We've got Modern coming up in San
Antonio.
Hip-hop
happening, baby.
If you are playing Team Unified Modern, which Megan and I are...
We're super excited.
You better get those decks ready.
Yeah.
I need a few cards for my deck, and where I'm going to be ordering them from. So,
nice.
Card Kingdom is an amazing sponsor, so show them some love. I'm going to send them some more stickers, because somebody let me know that we ran out of stickers. For them to give away, if you say I want an MTA sticker, they'll put one in your order. So I'm gonna send them some coming up here. I think even they're coming tomorrow. So it'll be any day now that you can request.
Very cool.
Just FYI. So that's really cool service.
Yeah.
CardKingdom.com/MTAcast. Well, Megan, we have a very special guest on the show this week.
What? I didn't even notice them in the room.
Well, that's because they're not in the room.
What witchcraft is this?
It's called Skype.
Oh, I've never heard of this program.
It's basically like a transporter from Star Trek, except that it's not that at all, and it's just two people talking on computers.
That still sounds amazing. Maria, who's our guest, though?
Our wonderful guest is Chris Cluey. He's joining us all the way from his beautifully pink-painted room.
Yep, in Southern California.
In sunny Southern California. And we're here in snowy Minnesota, even though the weather has been...
It is not snowy.
Quite global warmy the past few days.
Yes, it really
has. I heard it was, like 55?
Yeah.
More. It was like 62 here today.
Everything is melted.
Yeah.
It's insane. I've been walking around as though it's goddamn spring.
Well, you should. I mean, because it basically is.
Yeah. So, anyways, Chris, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you for having me on.
So we met Chris at PAX late last year.
Yeah.
And we did a show with him on stage, and it just kind of entered my mind. I was like, why have we never talked to you on our show? Because that would be so awesome, because you're such a positive force in the gaming community. And I thought it'd just be really interesting to kind of find out more about your connections to the game and what you love about Magic. And you've got your own game coming out soon. So we're going to talk about all that, but let's start at the very beginning, as they say in The Sound of Music.
Yes. It's a very good place to start.
Thank you. And ask just how you got started being a gamer, and specifically how that kind of led you to Magic.
Sure. So growing up, I think it was right around when I was like 7 or 8. I'd split my toe open at a birthday party, and I apparently was driving my parents crazy in the house. And so they're like, we need to get something to distract this kid. And so they got me a Nintendo Entertainment System.
Yes.
With, you know, Mario and Duck Hunt, and you get the light gun. And I mean, I was just instantly hooked. It was video games, video games, video games, have to play video games. And then from there, it kind of got into, okay, what are the other cool stuff like this that's out there? You know, what are the influences of this kind of stuff? So then it's Dungeons and Dragons, right? You know, I love doing Dungeons and Dragons, though my friends, we could never keep a group together long enough to really get past the build your own character stage.
Yeah, I had that problem as well.
Yeah,
it was the spirit was willing, but the flesh was weak.
Yeah, but, I want to go just back really quickly. When you say split your toe open,
yeah,
like I just need to know what that means.
So I was running around this friend's birthday was at SeaWorld, and they had these like black rubber mats, you know, because it gets wet, so
yeah,
you want to make sure kids don't slip and fall. But they, you know, the areas where it wasn't wet, they would have cement, and so like right on that edge right there, apparently as I was running, I managed to get the webbing between my big toe and the toe over, like,
no!
Cut down probably a solid like 2 or 3 inches.
I'm sorry I asked, but I needed to know.
I had to get stitches, and the thing was, like, I didn't even notice it until I got back to where my parents were, and they're like, why is your foot bleeding? And then I looked down and just, you know, started losing it.
We could spend this whole show talking about wounds that you got, but you didn't know you got them until somebody told you you had them.
That's always the best. It's like the worst Christmas ever. It's just like, what gifted? Oh, God, it's bleeding.
Exactly.
Hey, I got you a present.
What?
You're personally injured.
Oh, no. Did you, question about your early NES, did you shoot the dog in Duck Hunt?
I tried so many times.
Yeah.
I didn't know that this was a thing
I hated that dog.
Yeah. It's so annoying.
What?
Just laughing and smirking. It's
every
like,
time you failed, he would laugh at you.
I didn't realize that he laughed.
Oh,
I never played Duck Hunt. I just thought that he, like, you know, obediently went and was like, here's a duck that you got. Good job.
Well, he does if you shoot it. If you don't, he laughs at you.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Fair. So, yeah, how did D&D and Nintendo lead into Magic for you?
So my friends, you know, the people I hung around with, we were all interested in that kind of stuff, and so, you know, we tried to stay on top of what, not like really stay on top, but if something cool and nerdy came out, then odds were we were probably playing it. You know, you see something mentioned in Nintendo Power, or, you know, since this is back before the internet was actually really a thing. And so around about junior high, I want to say, one of my friends picked up, it was, I think, Revised was the edition. And he picked up one of those starter boxes where it had like the 100 cards in that instruction booklet that was like 80 pages in super small type.
Yes.
I loved that thing. And so we get the cards out and we don't even read the rules. We just start playing, right?
Yep.
So he's like, okay, so I think we use the lands to put these down. And, you know, you're playing instants as creatures. You're playing enchantments as fast effects. Like, oh, my cave bear? Okay, yeah. It just eats your other bear because it has a permanent giant growth. So.
Oh yeah, that seems good.
Wow, that card seems really good.
+3/+3
right.
For like a single green just stays there.
Just
all
like
right.
Forever.
Yeah.
So
I mean, and then, you know, we kept at it. We actually learned the rules and we figured out what all the cards did, and it was just this fascinating, like, it's a puzzle, right? You're trying to figure out the best way to solve this problem, and your friend is also trying to figure out that way, and one of you is gonna win and one of you is gonna lose. And you really want to win. So
yeah,
I remember playing with Magic for my first time before you and I got into the game, Megan, mm-hmm. when I was, I think, in middle school. And it was the same kind of experience, right? You have no idea what the rules are, but you see these cards and they have, like, pretty art pictures on them and fantasy creatures. And we had a dragon for sure, my sister and I. And we would just shuffle all the cards together and then each get half or something. And whoever just had the dragon won.
Right, yeah. It's the wind dragon.
So similar experience in a way. Yeah. And I kind of love that, right? Because you're just experiencing the game, not really how it was intended, but in just a really joyful, exploratory way.
Right. It's like the cards can be whatever you want them to be. And like and the great thing for me about Magic was that, you know, after we did learn the rules and everything, that universe was still pretty vast. Like, you know, the things you can imagine doing in Magic, whether it's card interactions or decks you want to build, like that's a pretty big universe. Whereas, you know, I've seen some other games where it's like, oh, this concept's so cool, but oh, then there's nothing there, right? Like I spent 5 minutes, I learned everything, and now I know what deck's gonna win, I know what deck's gonna lose, and then it's just like, why am I playing this now?
Right.
But I loved that sense of wonder with Magic that, you know, I can still remember from first playing it and even to now. Like, I have some issues with some mechanics, but
look, don't we all?
Look, I'm certain that it's not entirely my fault that I cannot win at Aether Revolt.
Oh gosh.
Real we're bad. Gonna name it. We're gonna like blame it on vehicles. We're gonna blame it on something.
Yeah, because it's definitely not us.
Because it's definitely not me. So, like, how do you play these days? Do you tend to play it like with friends, kitchen table? What's that look like?
Yeah, so primarily these days I play mainly Commander just because I love the, you know, you have access to everything. Like, I mean, yeah, there's like 12 banned cards or whatever, but they're just stupid broken. So it's fine that no one gets to use them. But yeah, it's like it really allows you to express yourself as a player in terms of, okay, I want to see if this ridiculously stupid combo that shouldn't work can work if I can get all these moving parts together, and then that one game where I pulled it off, it was legendary. Like stuff like that, like those are fun game experiences for me. Like I've moved way past my competitive stage where it's like I don't want to spend the time to get to know the odds good enough to play competitive Magic, and B, it's for me it's more fun now to just play with friends and everyone's having a good time. Like, and you try to do silly stuff like that. And like, you can still play to win, but it's not, I'm scowling and having rage driving through my heart because I'm not winning.
What are you talking about? That's the best part of the game.
Right? It's more like, oh, that sucked, but we can play another game. Like, so I'll give you a perfect example of that. Have you guys ever played the Game of Thrones card game?
Yes.
No.
Okay. I don't know if it's the same for your playgroup as it is for our playgroup, but after every single game, no matter who won, everyone is angry. Just like legit furious at each other.
I mean, I understand that for sure. It is a battle.
I mean, I haven't played that game, but I'm gonna now.
You're like, now I'm on my way.
Yeah, so, but like, it's like, we play it occasionally, but I find I don't need that feeling quite as much in my life anymore.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, that makes sense. So who's who are your commanders?
My commander. So I play as Mariki Rebarrett, because hugs. Who doesn't like hugs?
And, wait, what is that card?
So Mariki Rebarrett, she's white, blue, black, so Esper colors. She's a 1/1 from Ice Age, a legendary creature, obviously. And her ability is you tap her to take control of target creature. If she ever becomes untapped or dies or leaves play or whatever, kill that creature, it can't be regenerated. So,
oh, cool.
For Mariki Rebarrett decks, normally the way you play them is they're very antisocial because you just put in a lot of untap effects and then Mariki steals everything and you leave one alive so you can beat them to death with their own creature. But
stop hitting yourself.
Yeah, right. Yeah. It makes it somewhat unfun for your opponent if you're playing a well-optimized Mariki Rebarrett deck. So instead, I put in just really stupid win conditions where it's like, okay, I'm going to Psychosis Crawler into Jace's Archivist into freaking, I just drew 80 cards and everyone else is dead. But you have like four different ways to interrupt that from happening. So it's I like building Rube Goldberg machines. They're fun.
Oh, that's a super cool way to think about it.
Yeah.
So So you have been a gamer essentially, you know, from the day that you split your toe.
Yeah, pretty much.
Kind of like your genesis. Did you ever find...
I was birthed.
You were birthed.
In a classic like superhero, in a comic book, yeah. It'd be like, yep. Oh, how did you get your origin? Well, man, I was running at SeaWorld.
Yeah, I was running at SeaWorld.
So, like, my question is, because you made, you know, a career for yourself in the sports arena, sometimes I feel like people think that those two universes are so far separate. Did you find that ever in your life that there was a clash, or that they worked well together, or that you were judged for one or the other?
I would say I was definitely judged being in the sports world and having nerdy hobbies. Like growing up, that was one where it's definitely like, so I'm, you know, writing to football games, I would bring science fiction fantasy books with me to have something to do while I'm on the bus. So I'm in full pads, uniform, got my helmet next to me, and I'm reading freaking Piers Anthony or, you know, Eddings with the Belgariad, right? So, like, that was... There were many times where it was like, why are you reading that book? Or, you know, what's all that about? You know, stuff like that. But for me, I've always been like, well, if you want to know, go read the book. First off, like, it's probably way better.
Don't expect me to summarize this.
Right. Yeah.
Your personal cliff notes, buddy.
Exactly. But then the other part was that, like, you know, if someone wanted to make fun of it, it was just like, well, you know what? Fine. Fuck you. Like, this is what I do. Like, this is who I am. So deal with it, because I'll kick your ass on the football field.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I love that.
Literally, because kicking was the bit that you did.
Yes, I did. I did do a lot of kicking.
That is my understanding of football. You did the kicking bit.
Yep.
There's not a lot.
I was
lot
the
of
kicking
it,
man.
But it's important, and it happened.
That role is called the kicking man, I believe.
Yep. It is the kicking man.
Oh yes, I heard that they needed a new kicking man.
You know that in Magic, when you make a misplay, it's called a punt. Do you find that term offensive?
Well, I seem to be an expert at it, so I guess it fits.
I had to ask.
Yeah, so like whenever you misplay, you can be like, well, this is what I'm good at.
Yeah, punted another one.
Womp womp.
Sad trombone.
Sad trombone. So, besides being just an all-around great dude, gamer, and kicker of various objects, you're also well-known for being pretty vocal in the kind of progressive field, especially online. You know, you've written a book, your Twitter account is really popular, and kind of just a champion for the cause. And I guess... but a question we get a lot is that sometimes the Magic community and the gaming community with, you know, Gamergate and all that kind of stuff can be kind of a hard place to be sometimes if you're a woman or if you're a minority or something like that. And the question we get is, what can I do to make it a better space for everybody? So I thought I would just pose that question to you because it's probably something you've thought about.
Yeah, so that actually is something that, you know, obviously I deal with on a daily basis because, you know, that's what I talk about, but I also ran a game store for about 5 years. We eventually had to close it down because the rent was too damn high, but it was, you know, we had a really good community. We had a lot of people who wanted to come in and play games, and sadly just didn't sell enough stuff to pay the rent.
Yeah, but, where was the store?
It was in Costa Mesa. It was fairly near OCC, I think, Orange County College, Orange Coast College, whatever it's called. But yeah, so one of the things that both my brother and I, because he helped me run the shop, that we made sure to do was like, you know, hey, if someone's being a jerk or like someone's not, you know, respecting other people, then you shut it down. Like, it's okay to say someone who's using homophobic language, like, hey guys, not in here. Like, there you go.
Yeah.
I mean, they're probably not going to stop using it overall, but you've given them a small data point of, hey, maybe this isn't really socially acceptable. Like, maybe I shouldn't be doing this. Because if they get that data point from enough different areas, then it starts percolating in their brains, like, maybe I am the bad guy.
So, I like thinking of it as a data point, right? Because
yeah,
that's, you know, that's something that everybody can kind of latch on to and see. And enough times, like, let me reassess. Maybe I need to reassess where I'm at a little bit.
Yeah.
Right. And it can be uncomfortable saying something like that. Like, it's, you know, because no one wants a confrontation, right? Like, especially when you're there to play games. Like, it's supposed to be, oh, we're having a good time. You know, this should be fun. But then the thing is, you also have to think about it from the flip side of nobody wants to go play games and hear hateful language. Like, you talk about not having fun. That's a very bad way to, you know, to spend your time playing games. And you're also unlikely to continue playing games, right? Like, if you have that bad experience early on, then you're like, well, why would I ever want to do this? This sucks. And that leaves us as gamers poorer as a result, because now we don't have as many people to play against. So, I mean, it really is one of those things where, yeah, it might be a little bit uncomfortable for you to say something, but it's a lot more uncomfortable for the people who have to hear it. So, you know, if you're a game store owner, if you're the leader of your group, you know, say something. Like, that's how stuff changes.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is kind of related, just because I was thinking about it, and I know that, like, lots of people who play Magic and also parent listen to the show, and you yourself are a parent, and so...
In fact, you were making your kids dinner
before I told you.
Wait, hold on. Was it macaroni and cheese?
No, come on, I'm a chef.
Whoa, what are you?
Well, I mean, not like a legit chef. It was salmon, broccoli, and some tortellinis. So.
Holy cow.
Nice. It's super easy to make, too.
All right, cookbook incoming.
Take your macaroni and shove it.
Yeah. No, I tend to post my food porn fairly often on my Twitter account. So.
Okay, all right. Sorry, Megan. Go ahead.
It's okay. Yeah, so I was wondering, like, also, like, how do you approach kind of that parenting in like the current social climate and the current political climate? Because it's got to be something, like, if you think about it in gaming, then like you're thinking about it in parenting as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's probably more, my kids aren't quite that old yet, I think, to be dealing with that. They're 6 and 8. So I would assume that's probably more like 11, 12, 13 year age group.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think it's one of those things that parents do have to have those conversations with their kids. And again, like, it is going to be uncomfortable for you to have that conversation, because your kid's probably going to be at that stage where they don't want to hear anything from you. And then all of a sudden something they thought was, you know, hey, this is the thing that we do together. You know, why are they making me talk about these things? But if you never talk to your kid about it, then they can only go off of what they see online and what their friends model as behavior. And if those friends' parents don't talk about it, and all of a sudden your model for behavior is someone like Milo Yiannopoulos, for example,
oh, God.
You might not turn out as a pretty good functioning adult.
Yeah. Kids need parents. That was the whole lesson of Lord of the Flies, right? Like, that's
it helps.
It's it was about kids need parents.
The other thing to look at it too is, you know, from a parent's perspective, like, keep this in mind, is that your kid is going to model themselves after someone because they have to. That's how we act as human beings. So if you want them to have good models, you should probably be one of those models. which means, you know, nipping this kind of stuff early in the bud. Like, if you see your kid and the friends that they're hanging out with start using homophobic language, or, you know, maybe they say something racially offensive or something like that, just sit them down, have a talk, and say, hey, here's why this matters. Like, here's why this is important. Because one day you might be in that situation, and it's really going to suck for you if no one else says anything.
Yeah.
So, yeah,
this is kind of goes the other way too. Like, I feel somebody who is kind of, you know, around our age has to sometimes have these conversations with, like, their parents or somebody else in their family, right?
I tried to explain Gamergate to my parents. It was like, it basically boiled down to, please call the local police station and warn them what swatting is.
Yeah.
So,
oh boy. Yeah. Well. We're living in a kind of a tough time about this stuff, but it makes me glad to know that there's people like you out there kind of raising your voice for what's good. Thank you.
Well, not a problem. I mean, because the thing is, I think I have a lot of good experiences from gaming, right? Like, I think we've all had a lot of good experiences from gaming. Otherwise, we wouldn't be doing it, right? Like, despite how shitty, you know, freaking Game of Thrones makes me feel, I still keep doing it. Because at the end of the day, it's fun. Like, I like doing it. But, you know, if someone doesn't have that experience, then it really, on all of us as gamers, you know, like I said, it just makes us poorer off. And so let's actually work to show the better side of gaming. Let's make it so everyone has those good experiences and wants to be a gamer for the rest of their life, because then we have more people to play against, and more stupid little games that might have never succeeded might succeed, because now you have people who appreciate them.
More opportunities to steal people's big monsters and hit them in the face with them.
Yep. Exactly.
Does anybody ever tell you that your deck is just admitting that other people's decks are better?
So I also took Aikido in college. It's a martial art based around that you never really attack anyone. You just wait for them to attack, and then you either trip them or spin them around. And it's essentially their own force is what's causing their downfall.
I see how this. Yeah.
This is nice.
All right. That's
probably the mindset I had.
Yeah,
we don't have to fight, but if you do, you're gonna lose.
Excuse me, would you like to try and attack me? That's interesting.
Bring it on. So my follow-up question is, isn't it great to be an SJW, and how do we destroy all men?
Yeah, what are your personal plans?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I think about that on a daily basis because I feel as a male SJW, the sooner I can bring about our self-immolation, the better the world will be for our female overlords.
Mm-hmm. It really
is the driving factor in my daily life.
Megan and I have prepped our thrones from winch to rule.
Yes.
Will they be made of the bones of your enemies? Because that's important.
Absolutely. Yes. Mine's a skin throne.
Right now.
I'm sorry I ever said that.
That is the worst phrase I've ever heard in my life.
So we're just not doing phrasing anymore, are we?
Oh, God.
Boy.
Oh, God.
Well, I apologize to everyone's ears.
I was just going to say that, like, yes, like, because of that, really, we've only, like, prepped the foundations. We've, like, drawn some sketches.
Yeah.
Some, like, preliminary sketches.
Sketchwork.
Of the thrones from which we will rule once we have overthrown all men.
Yeah, obviously.
Yeah. Right. So until then, it's just, you know, some very detailed planning.
I'm just spitballing here.
Yeah.
Skin throne.
No!
Bone throne. Throne of tongues. Ooh, that's actually terrifying.
That's just gross.
Write that down, Game of Thrones, dude.
Yeah, throne of tongues.
Anyway.
They call him the licker.
Game of throne of tongues.
I guarantee you that's a porn somewhere.
You know what? You're right. Because what is it? Like rule 37 or 36?
34.
34. Thank you.
Yep.
If you think of it, it exists.
One. Yep.
Yep.
That makes sense.
So a real question for you is
that was a real question.
That was a good one.
Very real. Another real question.
Yes.
Is that you have recently entered the realm of making games yourself, and you successfully funded a Kickstarter for a new game, Twilight of the Gods. So what was that like to kind of transition from a career that was pretty different than being a game designer, even though gaming has been in your life since the your Genesis moment of splitting your toe?
Since my superhero origin.
Yes.
Yes.
It was really cool. It was something I've been working on for a pretty long time. Like I'd had the initial idea for the game, I want to say about 7 or 8 years ago, and this was back when I was still playing in the league. So it was more just kind of something that I would bounce around in my head during practice to keep from getting bored. It was like, so for me, the origin of Twilight of the Gods, like why I decided to come up with a game, is it comes back to Magic, and that I love playing Magic. Like I've played it all my life. One thing I absolutely hate about playing Magic is getting mana screwed. Because you don't get to play with your toys.
Yeah, amen.
Right?
Amen. Very true.
You're just sitting there staring at these cards like, welp, I can't do anything. It doesn't matter. I lose the game. This is frustrating. Alternatively, getting mana flooded. Oh, there's another land. There's another land.
God. I feel you.
Oh, boy, this is fun.
It's worse. Yep. Gosh. Yeah. No, I can't pick which one is worse. Flood.
Flood is worse.
Flood is worse. Okay.
Yeah, because you could do something.
Yeah.
If you just drew a card.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
So for me, the big thing I initially wanted to solve was resource generation. How do you make a game where you can't get screwed out of resources? And one thing that I had always really liked was in the World of Warcraft trading card game, the first one by Upper Deck. Their resource system was at any time, so they had special quest cards that basically counted as lands. But then at any time, if you didn't have any quest cards in your hand, you could take one of your cards and put it face down, and it would provide you a resource.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So you could always guarantee that you were going to get to play. And so I was like, that's a very elegant solution, but I don't just want to take that outright because that's stealing. And B, like I want to do something better. Because the other thing that kind of sucks sometimes about playing Magic is that there's no player interaction, right? You are effectively playing against the odds in your deck. So it could be an AI across from me. For all that I know, if I make the optimal play, either my odds are such that I win the game or I lose the game. And really, it's not really dependent on you as players, right? Like, it's more... I mean, you have to recognize certain situations, but except in the case of a blue player holding a single card in his hand, which 90% of the time is an island, but 10% of the time is a counterspell. You know, like that's actual player interaction because now you're reading each other.
But it feels like 100%.
Oh, it definitely feels like it.
When you remember it afterwards, you're like,
when it's important, it's always a counterspell.
Yes, exactly. When it matters, it's.
Yeah. Yep. So one of the other things I wanted to do with my game is make it so that your resource generation was also interacting with your opponent. And so that was like, okay, well, what if we had a game where the players actually had to trade resources with each other, right? So card game like Magic, you know, like standard style dueling card games, but you are dependent upon your opponent in order for you to actually play the game. So you have to cooperate at first. Like, and it's, you know, it's up to you as a player to decide, okay, what am I trading for? What am I not trading for? And, you know, there's ways to take from the other person if they won't just flat out trade with you. But the bulk of the early game is very much, okay, I have these four cards in my hand that I really want to play. I have these three cards that I can trade for resources, but I'm going to need some more resources. How do I get my opponent to give me just enough power to where I can get an advantage versus I don't want to give them too much because then they might have the advantage. So it's you're even at the start, even when it just comes to the very basics of, you know, generating your resources, you will always be interacting with the other person. And then the other big thing is that we use the back of the card as the resource itself. So that way it's like, okay, now you don't even need to worry about what's on the front of the card. But you can, because that adds a new design element to where, okay, if these players are trading cards back and forth over and over and over, well, why not make it do something with that card that's in front of the other player? So, sorry, I realize I'm rambling, but I get very excited talking about my game.
No, that's
fine. You should.
This is cool. This is super interesting.
Yeah.
Keep going.
It's like Settlers of Catan and Magic had a baby.
Yeah. So the big thing is that these cards that you and your opponent are trading back and forth, you know, they are your resources, but they are also traps because your opponent has ways to flip those face up at, you know, points in the game, whether it's through a creature ability or a spell or whatever. And now all of a sudden you get to figure out, okay, just how badly am I screwed by trading with this other person? So we found it's really interesting. In all the playtesting we've done, it's the first about four turns of the game, very cooperative. People want to give each other resources. They want to play these cool cards in their hand. Right around turn five, it turns into the most bloodthirsty, like, do you want to trade? No.
Brutal.
Yeah.
So it's a lot of fun. So for me, the whole reason why I made this was because I wanted to fix some of the problems that I saw in Magic, you know, things that made the game an unfun experience for me. And then that kind of morphed into a design philosophy itself of we always want to make sure everyone gets to play with their toys. So because that's a problem in Magic as well. So something like my Mariki Rebarrett deck, right? That's someone I'm not letting other people play with their toys. Like I'm functionally changing the game.
You're arriving on Christmas and being like, excuse me, I'll take this.
Yes. Yeah, I'll take that. Yeah. So again, unfun. Blue permission decks unfun because agreed. One person is playing the game.
I don't know like, what you guys are talking about. It's the most kind of fun.
Well, see, exactly. That's the problem is that blue decks are really fun to run. They're not so much fun to come up against.
Look, I don't know what the problem is with when I'm telling you, like, my biggest gift is just letting me take away other people's things.
Right?
Megan, for your birthday, I'm going to give me a present, and then your job
and
is
then
to
I get
steal
to take
it.
It.
But you have to do it when I'm not watching, and I'm going to put, like, a little laser field around it.
Perfect.
It's going to be like that movie Entrapment.
Yeah.
With Sean Connery.
No.
Oh, yeah. And they have to do the laser.
With Catherine Zeta's.
Yeah, Catherine Zeta-Jones, right? And yeah. They go under the lasers. And then, yeah, that's what it's going to be
I've
like.
Never heard of this.
Well.
Do you remember that laser
it was pretty
tag
bad.
Place that we went to that had the laser room?
Yes, that's what it was
okay.
like.
Anyways. There's a laser tag place here that has like this laser room. Laser room. Anyways. You were talking about a game before.
Have you considered lasers in your game?
Anyways, just lasers.
Not yet.
Just, you know, think about it.
Well, it sounds really cool, and it's got like a collapse of the Roman Empire feel, and like sweet gods that are involved somehow.
Yeah. So that was one of the other things is that. Originally creating the universe, I had like this original IP that wasn't very good. It was like, you know, based on the four directions of the compass, you had like the four elemental forces, right? And they're competing against each other. You have the city of humans at the center. And it's like standard fantasy schlock stuff, right? <It's>, hooray! But then, so we went to the publisher and he's like, Alan at Victory Point Games. And he was like, yeah, you know, the mechanics, everything, this is fantastic. But we need a better coat of paint, right? Like we need to have something we can sell to people that will is not just kind of this generic thing that you would find anywhere, but like what's something different? What's something we can do? And so we started thinking about, okay, like what fits the mechanics of this game? You know, what fits kind of this idea that you're battling back and forth with each other and you're trying to gain this power for yourself. And eventually we came up with the idea of, what if when the Roman Empire was collapsing, you know, right around 500, 600 AD. So that gives us a time frame. You know, that gives us a period of time that we can draw from. What if as the empire was collapsing and all these other civilizations are collapsing, what if the pantheons are collapsing too and the gods are dying out? And they realize, because they're gods, they can see into the future a bit. Oh, hey, the Dark Ages are coming. We're not all going to survive this. We need to grab as much power as we can from each other because, you know, like Highlander, right? There doesn't have to be only one, but your odds of surviving are a lot better.
Yeah.
If you're killing off all the other ones.
Yeah.
So it's, so essentially that, then we knew, okay, cool. This is a story we can tell. Like this gives people something to latch onto. And then it was, okay, if we're having gods in this game, why not let the player play as the god, right? Like why not give them a tangible link to their deck on the battlefield saying, you are this deity. This is you fighting for power. And then to let the player actually feel that, the god powers have a once per game like feat. Ability, right? So, because okay. I like Hearthstone also, but I have a huge amount of problems with Hearthstone, but I like the feel of Hearthstone with the classes.
Yeah.
And so we're like, well, shoot, let's do something similar to that, where it's more like a war machine, you know, once per game feat, as opposed to a once per turn, you know, ability you get to use, but gives the player another way to express themselves in the game itself. And it's, you know, and you feel it, like you look at it like, oh, cool, here's my god card. And then when you use it, it flips over and the back of it is all just full art of that god.
Oh,
so A, it lets you know what you did, and B, you get cool full art.
Question, is one of the god's ability behead? Because I will play that god Highlander flavor. Just saying.
I don't know that we have a behead mechanic in the game.
Just think about it. I'm just throwing a lot of ideas out. Beheading, lasers, this might be an entirely different game now that I'm saying it aloud.
No, same game. Same game, lasers.
Beheading, lasers, and the bone throne. We have an 80s metal concept album right here.
Oh, where's my time machine?
Oh, you guys, we weren't designing a game this whole time. We were designing an 80s
metal
concept
album. Because, like, to see behind the curtain of developing a game, this is kind of a fantasy,
yeah.
I think, for a lot of people who are super into Magic and other games is making their own. And it's really neat to hear the story of how it all actually comes together.
How long do you think the process was, like, start to finish? Or, obviously, you're approaching the finish, but...
Right. So for us, in terms of designing the game, it was about 4 years. In terms of, took about 2 years to get the basic concepts down. Like, okay, how does this core mechanic of the game work without breaking the game? Does this make it unfun? Does this make it enjoyable? And so narrowing all that down, that took a while. Then it took, I'd say, about a year to develop each faction's particular flavor to kind of figure out, okay, what sub-mechanic within this faction differentiates its play style versus this other faction? You know, why do I want to play this faction versus why do I want to play this faction? And then that's when we approached Alan, and that took about probably, I want to say, 4 months, 5 months from them getting the prototype to us going through. And we were also doing extensive playtesting within our development team. Development team. It's me, my brother, and two of our friends.
Hey, man, nobody knows that.
Development team is a development team.
That's what it is.
Yeah, my team and I. And it was, okay, hey, random beta testers who have never played the game, here are the rules, play the game. What is wrong with it? And then that was like, okay, well, these rules are confusing. This doesn't make sense as an element on the card. You know, I had trouble getting through this part. I didn't really understand how this mechanic worked. And then it was like, okay, how do we make it easier? Right? Like, how do we, either through the design of the card itself, through the wording of the card, or through the rules themselves as written, and maybe the layout that they're written in, how do we make it easier for the player to understand, to get over that initial hurdle, to where they can see that universe stretching out in front of them of, here are all the cool things I can do in this game? Because that's really one of the biggest problems in designing what is essentially a complex game, because, you know, there's all the moving parts of all the cards interacting with each other and keywords interacting and, you know, players alternating actions, stuff like that. How do you get the players to understand that, you know, within hopefully like 3 or 4 games, maybe 1 or 2 games if they have someone teaching them?
Yeah.
Like, because when you're designing a complex game, like, you have to make it easy for people to pick up. Otherwise, it could have the greatest mechanics in the world, but if it has a 500-page rule book of like 10-point font single spaced that I have to go through because you laid out every single thing in there, I'm probably not going to play it, right?
Yeah,
like, yeah, absolutely. Our SJW manual is 500 pages, very
it's,
small print.
Yeah,
it's
9 points.
Oh, nice.
9 points.
That's, you know, that's a man, you know, not a game. That's
no, it's
for the destruction
exactly.
of the patriarchy.
Yes.
The most dangerous game.
It's just a point-by-point kind of instruction.
So that was one of the big things, was, you know, trying to figure out, okay, how do we make it approachable? Because we want people to play this.
So this is a final question that I think is interesting and gives you a look inside everybody's soul. So I like to think about, if I could design a Magic set, what would I design and why? And mine is
I already know.
Yeah, you
know.
I know
the answer.
It's
to this.
A Huey Lewis in the News 80s hair metal band theme set. Megan's is a waffle
Mine
set.
Mine is a waffle themed set.
What, breakfast set?
Yes, like a breakfast
yeah,
set.
Yeah, uh-huh. Yes. Wow. So the question is, of course, what is your set?
What is my set? It would have to be something that just breaks the rules. Like that was one of the things I loved. Like, I never got a chance to play Cracked or Unhinged, but I love the idea that now you're playing a different game.
Yeah.
Because frequently now it's, okay, I'm interacting with the other person, right? Like, we're here having fun. We're playing Calvin Ball. stuff that just, that breaks and subvert things in unexpected ways, to where you're like, that was a ridiculously stupid thing that shouldn't have worked, but it did. How did that happen?
I feel like that is innate in the Huey Lewis in the News set. Honestly.
You're telling me that's not about being sincere.
Right. That is exactly what I'm saying. And there's a card called The Power of Love, and it's like a mythic, but you can't cast it unless your opponent also casts it.
Oh.
And both of you win the game. Think about it, wizards.
In before rules lawyers at Reddit.
Yes, yep.
The card is impossible to play.
Excuse me, actually. You can't
both win the game. Shut it down. Shut it down. I'm reinventing here. I'm innovating.
Yep.
Oh my gosh. Thank you so much for talking to us, Chris. It was awesome.
Thank you for hanging out.
Yeah, no, thank you for having me on. I really appreciate it.
If people want to find you on the internet or your things, where can they find you?
Best place is at Chris Warcraft. That's my Twitter handle. My current name is Cassandra, after the Greek myth of the prophet who was cursed to foretell the future and always be accurate. No one would listen.
Yes. I get it.
Yeah, it's subtle.
Awesome. But, well, gosh.
At Chris Warcraft in... Yeah, that's me.
And you've got stuff for people to read out there, and you can find that by doing the Google searches or following you on Twitter. It was really cool talking games and magic and game design with you, so thanks so much for coming on.
And
thank you.
I look forward to hearing more about Twilight of the Gods as it's out there in the world.
Yeah, I look forward to sharing it. Gen Con is when we're planning on releasing it. So
Cool!
Around Gen Con,
Gen Con's the best.
Something more for people going to look forward to. That's awesome.
All right, Megan, I want to know about your super sweet pun.
Okay.
Did I say pun?
You did, and it was weird. Like...
Why did I say that?
I have no idea.
Well, I guess we're talking about magic, so...
So it could be.
Megan, now I need you to make up a super sweet pun and tell me about it.
You have to give me some time.
Oh. I'm legitimately weirded out.
I'm weirded out as well.
Okay, your super sweet play.
Okay, so I was playing in a draft, so in this game, right, it's gone on for a long time. I'm at basically all you need to know is that I am dead on board to my opponent's free jam regent.
Yeah.
And they also have essentially four blockers.
As you usually are against that card.
It's, oh my god, it's so good.
So good.
They can pump it so much. And I'm playing, my deck was a mediocre red-white aggressive deck. And so I have in play, I'm dead on the swing back, but it's my turn. My opponent is at four.
Yeah.
I've put them to four. I have a Welder Automaton, which is the 2/1 that you can pay four mana to ping them.
Yes.
I have a Spireside Infiltrator that when it becomes tapped, it deals a damage to them.
Oh my god, I'm getting so excited right now.
And then I have one other, I have a Gearshift Ace, right? So those are my three creatures.
Okay.
I also have a Mobile Garrison, the 3/4.
Yeah.
And I have a Consulate Dreadnought.
Okay.
In play. And I have, I think, 9 or 10 lands in play. Because I drew a lot of lands over the course of this game.
Cool.
So, but my point is that, right, so my opponent attacked me on their previous turn, attacked me for the first time with the free jam regent, and I chumped with, some flyer that I had.
Yeah.
So I chump blocked with this flyer, and it's my turn, and I'm looking at my opponent's life total, and I'm like, F, I don't have anything to block or kill this free jam regent, and I'm dead to it, and my opponent's at four, and I literally cannot push through combat damage, right? They have more blockers than I have attackers. And I'm looking at it, and I'm I only have enough mana to activate this Welder Automaton twice.
I figured out how you get to three, but
right, that's the thing, so I'm looking at it.
Oh, it's the Mobile Garrison!
Yeah, so I'm looking at it, and literally I sit there for a full minute being I can't believe I'm about to lose this game. I've been eking this out over so many turns. So, and I ping twice, and I, the Spireside Infiltrator, and I'm like, is there any way I can tap this Spireside? In one of those random ways, can I tap it twice? And I'm like, holy F.
I can.
So I tap my Spireside Infiltrator to ping them and activate the Mobile Garrison, move to attacks, attack with just the Garrison, and untap my Infiltrator, and then tap everything to crew the
Consulate Dreadnought.
Consulate Dreadnought, ping them again,
oh
and then
my God.
Deal them the last two with the Welder
Automaton. Yes!
It was so good.
That's
it felt
great.
So good because it was such a wonky line, right?
Yeah.
It was literally my brain had to go through it was scrambling. It was God, if only I could tap this Infiltrator twice. And then it was bing. Wait a goddamn second.
It's cool because those are the moments that you kind of hate more than anything in Magic when you're I'm so close. My opponent's at one. I could have done something. What could I? And then your mind is racing back through all the deeds that you've done in life.
Yeah.
And it's Christmas Eve and there's an angel telling you what to do. Yeah.
And you should have married that librarian.
That was really the sub-message of that movie.
Is marry librarians?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure it is.
Anyway.
Wait, isn't it that spinsters become librarians? All librarians are spinsters?
Yeah, kind of.
It's like an all squares and rectangles situation.
Well, if you weren't married back then, you were a librarian or a teacher.
I was going to say, not all spinsters are librarians, but all librarians are spinsters.
Yes. That was on my SAT, for sure.
Absolutely it was.
I only took the ACT.
What?
Twice.
You got away with that?
Yeah.
Weird.
Yeah, in Minnesota, the SAT is not widely used.
The ACT is not widely used in Texas.
Yeah, I think that is kind of how it goes with different states.
Weird.
Like one wants more than the other.
Anyway. Overall, that was super satisfying. Generally, last time we talked, I would say that my general Ether Revolt record at the time was 1-2, honestly.
Yeah.
But I've moved up to 2-1.
Great.
My average is now 2-1, so eking it out.
I mean, we're working our way up.
Trying, man.
Working my way back to you, babe. My 3-0 record.
What song is that?
Working My Way Back to You by the Spinners.
Don't know it.
Well.
All right.
To touch on GP Vancouver, which happened this past weekend. The format was modern. The players came out with their Boggle decks in hand, I assume. That was 90% of the field.
90% of the field. In that case, that would be really bad because none of them made the top eight. If your deck is 90% of the field and doesn't make top eight, that's problematic. No, there were... So the story of the weekend was Death's Shadow put up an incredible record.
Yes, it did.
Across the players playing it.
And that's kind of interesting because it did have... You know, there was a key banning recently.
Yes, of Gitaxian Probe, which the deck did play because it was key to dealing yourself damage.
Yep.
To make sure that when you played that Death's Shadow, it was huge.
It was big.
It was real big.
So there's three copies of Death's Shadow in the top eight.
Yeah, that's a lot.
That's quite a lot. But there was interesting diversity. I think there is strong format diversity besides that.
Yeah.
We also saw Abzan Company in the top eight. Merfolk in the top eight. I'm sure the professor is very happy about that. Megan is making
a face because
she says elves is a better merfolk.
Merfolk is worse elves.
Mono White Eldrazi and Taxes. Affinity.
Ooh.
There's Affinity. And Naya Byrne, which is kind of cool. Josh Utterleighton took it down in the end. But that's I like seeing all these different decks. And it was cool that somebody was able to kind of narrow in on Death Shadow being an all-star now. And
absolutely.
Just kind of exploit that. So it was kind of a mini break of the format, I guess I would say.
Yeah.
So that was cool to see. Great tournament all around. And I'm feeling the modern burn, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I should go to a doctor. But what I mean is, we're going to play, as we mentioned.
Yeah.
And Megan told me yesterday, she looked at me cold, dead in the eye and said,
I sure did.
For every two games of Limited you play, you have to play one game of Modern.
That's what I said. Match.
Match.
I didn't say it. I said for every
draft
you do,
okay.
You have to play a match of Modern.
Okay, that's fair.
I mean, you're the number's going to go up. The ratio is going to go up as we get closer.
Are you playing Elves for sure?
No. Because we share too many lands.
Okay, what do you want to do?
I don't know. I'm going to figure out what I'm going
to
play, man.
You can force me to play something else, except that I have a foiled Daybreak Hornet. Somebody gave that to me. A listener gave that to me. Thank you, by the way. It's beautiful.
I don't know what I'm going to play yet.
Okay.
We'll figure it out. I'll figure it out. We'll figure it out. It'll get figured out.
Everybody, Amonkhet is happening. It's real. We can't avoid it any longer. Just kidding. We're all excited for it. Some new art was recently released. We get to see some of the packaging for Amonkhet and the first look at the gods from Amonkhet. So there's a cat, an ibis, a crocodile, a jackal or a puppy pup, and a cobra snack. And I wanted to ask Megan, you can see these, by the way, on dailymtg.com. What color do you think all these gods are?
Okay, so go up. Let's start
at
the top.
Okay, this is the first one, cat.
The first one is the cat.
Definitely bread-faced cat.
Bread-faced cat. It's so true. Okay, I'm not sure about that one yet. Let's go down.
Ibit.
Ibis. So we were talking about whether we think these are going to be one color or multi.
Yes.
My guess is that if it's one color, it's blue.
Okay.
If it's multi, it's blue-white.
Okay.
What if these are shards?
They could be.
Wow. Okay, anyways, moving on. Crocodile. Oh. Ooh.
This is so hard.
Crocodile and snack are I know. So... Right, that makes me think that it's like...
That makes you think it's more than one.
No, that makes me think that it's only one. Because otherwise those would both be, in my mind, green-black. So it would make more sense if, like, Crocodile was black and Snick was green.
But look at this dog. This dog looks so black to me.
Yeah, but someone said jackals are traditionally red.
Oh, you're right.
So I guess it would be red, or if it's multi, it's red-white.
Yep, you're right. And then you would put Snek as green and Crocodile as
black.
This bird is white and the cat is blue?
No, the bird is blue and the cat is white.
Oh.
And I'm feeling like the cat is like...
Yeah, she does kind of look like Justice Cat.
Yeah.
Justice Cat!
You should check out my new Sunday morning cartoon.
Oh, what's it called?
Justice Cat.
Justice Cat. Fighting crime on four legs. Eating birds. Justice Cat. I would watch that.
Yeah, me too.
So yeah, Amonkhet, the hype builds. We also got to see packaging for Modern Masters 2017 edition.
Ooh. Hello, Grizzlebrand.
Grizzle Daddy is on the cover
of
one of these packs. He's the packaging. So I'm excited. Modern Masters is always a delight.
Yeah, really is.
Basically it's designed for draft. So it's a fantastic experience. I'm excited. Okay. That's all.
Wait.
What?
How do you feel about the colors?
Like, I think that's right.
You think that we have pinpointed.
I mean, I could see the ibis being white instead of blue, but now that I think about it, like
I feel like that cat looks way more white.
Yeah.
And the ibis feels blue. And I guess with five of them, it is just most likely that there's one for each color right now.
The other question is,
oh my God, that cat has very human hands.
They all do. Look at.
Oh, those hands are eerily human.
Yeah.
They're like, you know, they're very human.
Like, are these enchantment gods like Theros, or is it something new? I'm going to say it's probably something new. But
I agree that it's something new.
But who knows?
I mean, this art is great.
This art is fantastic. Very cool. And, like, cutest card is already difficult, and there's only five things that I've seen.
Yeah.
Because this Snek, look at this Snek.
He's so business.
So cute. Business Snek.
Business Snek.
And then there's this bread cat, which, great.
Yeah.
New art of Liliana, too, by the way, that is just super fly.
That's really fly art.
She's like, I've got my peacock fan and my bunch of grapes, and you are gonna get dead.
Yeah. Get wrecked.
Gideon looks like a Banff.
He looks like grizzled.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like old Gideon.
That dude's like, he's getting to the point where he's gonna start drinking whiskey and saying, I've seen some shit.
Got out of that game a long time ago. And there's full art lands coming in one of every four boosters.
Listen, I used to rescue planes, but...
But don't you have that awesome whip made of light and energy, Grandpa?
I hung up that whip, kid.
But what about your oath to the Gatewatch?
Do you know what? Everyone else in the Gatewatch is dead.
This is what the magic movie's actually going to be.
It's like, it's going to be No Country for Old Men, where Gideon is the old sheriff character.
Yes.
And Nicol Bolas is the scary, scary man.
I really love this idea about the full arts, too, by the way. Because that way they don't have to be, you know, they want them to be special, right?
Yeah.
So they're still special, but you can still get them. I hope this is a feature of every set. Anyway.
I hope so, too.
Just saying, we're going to have Nicol back on the show
soon,
considering this is his plane.
Yeah,
so
he's gonna have to talk to us about what's what on Amonkhet.
Yeah. Well, that's our show. Thanks for watching, everybody. We're gonna try and get out of this elevator that we've been trapped in the whole time.
Man, it's starting to get, you know, I feel like my sense of gravity is messed with.
Like you don't know which way's up?
Yeah.
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 Trapped in a box long enough, you'll lose all sense of self.
Oof. That's a... note to end the show on.
Sounds like I've been quoting an actual study.
Yeah, like it really does. All right, everybody. Thank you once again to everyone who is a patron of the show. We really cannot say enough how much it means to us. And thank you again to Card Kingdom, cardkingdom.com/MTAcast for their support of the show as well and their excellent service to all of their customers.
Check us out on YouTube, youtube.com/MTAcast and youtube.com/MTAplays to watch gameplay videos from our friend Cube April and, of course, our main YouTube channel for deck techs, super awesome other stuff, video versions of this episode, etc. Go sub. That helps us as well. We have some cool stuff up there, too.
Sick. Follow us at MTAcast on Twitter if you have not already. Send us an email, magicktheamateuring@gmail.com. I also realized the other day.
What?
Did you know that sometimes regular emails get sent to the spam folder?
Yes.
That is an issue.
Yeah, I don't really know what to do about it, but...
We're very sorry if we have not replied.
We'll figure it out.
I noticed that there were some in there that it was like, oh no.
Yeah, I have no idea why that's happening.
I have no idea either. So please send us an email. We are now checking because we know.
So. But we also have a fancy new label printer. So if you want to buy stuff from magicktheamateuring.com, our shop is open. We have t-shirts.
Playmats.
Magnets.
Sick-ass magnets.
That's it. But all of those things will now be able to get back on track because my normal printer broke and is a sad lump of useless plastic right now. So now we have a label printer which will get the job done.
All right, everybody.
Okay, bye.